Page 150. Republicans in trouble. Even Arkansas Republicans grew tired of problems surrounding the militia war and Governor Clayton's policies. Because of this, a new group was formed called the Liberal Republicans. They hoped to end corruption, lift voting restrictions for Confederate supporters, and weaken the powers of the governor. They also hoped these changes would bring them support from many Arkansas Democrats. Both were anxious to rid the state of Governor Clayton and his followers. Lieutenant Governor James Johnson's disagreements with Clayton led him to become one of the early leaders of the Liberal Republicans. As the elections of 1870 approached, the Republican divisions were exactly what Arkansas Democrats needed to win back a number of state legislative seats. While Republicans fought amongst themselves, Democrats worked to increase voter registration. Mudslinging Republicans, however, hardly even noticed. Their fighting continued even after Governor Clayton was appointed to a seat in the U.S. Senate. Liberal Republicans could hardly believe that Clayton refused to let Lieutenant Governor Johnson take over as governor. Johnson was furious, and he and his supporters tried to have Clayton impeached. But Clayton did not give up easily. He offered the Secretary of State position to Johnson, which he surprisingly accepted. Next in line for the governor's position was Senate President and loyal Clayton supporter Osra Hadley. New Republican Leaders. With Clayton and Johnson in new leadership positions, Joseph Brooks stepped in to lead the Liberal Republicans, and Elisha Baxter became the leader of the Regular Republicans. Joseph Brooks was passionate about civil rights for freedmen. Elisha Baxter was a successful merchant, lawyer, and union sympathizer. He and the Regular Republicans became known as the Minstrels. The Brooks-Baxter War. By 1872, the Republican groups were at it again. No longer interested in supporting Hadley for governor, the Regular Republicans switched their support to Elisha Baxter. Liberal Republicans had chosen Joseph Brooks as their candidate for governor. On election day, suspicious voting results from several counties were thrown out. Eventually, Elisha Baxter was declared the winner. In his acceptance speech, he promised the immediate enfranchisement of those persons who are now denied a voice in the selection of their rulers. True to his word, Baxter gave important government positions to people from all parties, including Democrats. Democrats also won nearly every available seat in the legislature and soon called for a new constitutional convention. When Baxter agreed to the new convention and to cut government funding for railroads, many Regular Republicans switched their support to Joseph Brooks. Then, after a judge proclaimed Joseph Brooks the rightful governor of Arkansas, Brooks and his supporters marched into the State House to remove Baxter. A surprised Baxter reluctantly left the governor's office and moved down the street to the Anthony Hotel. With emotions high, supporters from both sides flooded into the city prepared for a fight. Brooks' supporters brought in crates of weapons and armed themselves along one side of the street. Baxter supporters hauled a large cannon from the banks of the Arkansas River and mounted it facing the crowd. Tensions were so high that people feared a war would soon break out. Although soldiers were called in to control the tense crowd, several shots were fired. Fighting between supporters broke out in other locations as well. Some estimates claim more than 50 men were killed in skirmishes around the state. Page 152, A Call for Help. Despite numerous requests from Arkansas citizens, an entire month of violence passed before President Ulysses S. Grant stepped in to help. In a telegram, he informed the citizens he supported Governor Baxter. To ease the tension, President Grant appointed Joseph Brooks postmaster of Little Rock. When Brooks accepted the position, the fighting and violence finally ended. The Convention of 1874. By the summer of 1874, Arkansas Republicans realized the government would again fall into the hands of returning Democrats. With Confederate voting restrictions lifted, Democrats called for a new state convention, where Arkansas's fifth state constitution would be written. In one of the largest margins in Arkansas history, 80,259 voted for the new convention, while 8,547 voted against it. Democrats soon controlled more than 75% of the state's legislative seats and the convention. Although the new draft of the Constitution provided civil rights for all Arkansas citizens, it changed nearly every other Republican policy. It drastically weakened the powers of the governor, returned the governor's term to 2 years, and limited the state's ability to tax its citizens. Another record crowd turned out to approve the new Constitution and return Arkansas Democrats to power. Once again, state government was in the hands of many men from the pre-Civil War planter class. Redeemer Democrats. Democrats who returned to power in Arkansas and throughout the South saw themselves as redeemers. They believed their goal was to redeem the South from the violence and corruption of the Reconstruction era. Augustus H. Garland was one of these. Before the Civil War, Garland had been a lawyer and Whig politician who opposed secession. But when Lincoln requested troops following the battle at Fort Sumter, Garland joined the Confederacy. Later, Garland became Arkansas's 11th governor and the first Democrat to be elected since before Reconstruction. In his first speech, he said, "Let no man be put in fear or injured or denied any right on account of race, color, or previous conditions of servitude." With the Democrats firmly in control of state government, Reconstruction in Arkansas was over. Republican leaders had given up trying to force Arkansas citizens to accept Northern ways. Not until the Compromise of 1877 would Reconstruction come to an end throughout the South. Compromise of 1877. The presidential election of 1876 brought with it so much conflict and corruption that leaders were unsure how to resolve the issue. After counting the votes, Democratic candidate Samuel J. Tilden had more electoral votes than Republican Rutherford B. Hayes. But the electoral votes from four states were in dispute, and both Republicans and Democrats were claiming victory. With no clear guidance as to how to proceed, Congress appointed a committee to investigate the matter and determine the winner. 3 months later, a compromise proposed the disputed electoral votes be awarded to Hayes in exchange for a total withdrawal of U.S. troops from the South, a Southern Democrat named to the president's cabinet, and support for Southern Railroad expansion. The deal, known as the Compromise of 1877, formally ended Reconstruction, but it did not bring an end to other problems in the South. Linking the past to the present. Problems with the Electoral College system still happen even today. In the 2000 presidential election, results in Florida were so close that for several weeks, officials could not declare a winner. When the state's votes were finally tallied, Republican George W. Bush received 537 more votes out of 6 million than his Democratic opponent Al Gore. With a nationwide total of 50,999,897 popular votes, Gore won the popular election. But the 537 votes in Florida were enough to award Bush all 25 electoral votes. With a total of 271 electoral votes, Bush was declared the winner.
Page 154, The Reconstruction Legacy. Despite the violence, corruption, and lost opportunities of Reconstruction in Arkansas, there were many positive things accomplished across the state. Some of the most enduring changes were made in the field of education, such as the establishment of public schools for both black and white students. Religious groups like the Quakers started more than 50 schools that benefited black children. By 1870, more than 600 new schools had been established throughout the state. The first state university in Arkansas was established during Reconstruction. It was called the Arkansas Industrial University, but is known today as the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville. The Branch Normal College at Pine Bluff was also built during this era. In the beginning, it was a school designed for training black teachers. Joseph C. Corbin was the first black Arkansan to head the state-supported college. Today, this college is known as the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff. The Arkansas School for the Blind and the Arkansas School for the Deaf were given permanent homes in Little Rock. Republican leaders also worked to strengthen the state economy by expanding railroads, building levees, and creating a system to help the state pay off its debts. Although African Americans had more freedoms than ever before, they still battled poverty, abuse, and discrimination. Thousands tried to earn a living as farmers or laborers for planters. Even as Reconstruction came to a close in Arkansas, its effect followed citizens well into the next century. Much of the unfinished business of the time would not be resolved for nearly 100 years. Arkansas Portrait, Charlotte Andrews Stevens, 1854-1951. Charlotte Andrews Stevens was born a slave in Little Rock. Her father, William Wallace Andrews, was educated as a young child by the prominent Chester Ashley family. When the Ashleys fled to southern Arkansas to escape the Union Army, they left Charlotte's father a house and property, where he built a church. During the Civil War, Minister Andrews started a school for black children. During Reconstruction, 15-year-old Charlotte was hired as the first black teacher at the Union School in Little Rock. She worked daily to help educate black children. Later, Charlotte enrolled as a student at Oberlin College in Ohio, where she studied a variety of subjects. After 3 years there, Charlotte returned to teaching in Little Rock. During that time, she taught subjects like science, Latin, and English. Over the years, she taught students from the first grade to the eighth grade. At Dunbar High School, she served as a teacher and as principal. Charlotte and her husband John had 6 children. Her perseverance during difficult times makes her one of Arkansas's everyday heroes.